Welcome to the Just Fly Performance Podcast, episode 44. Today on the show, I have Adam Feit, Director of Sports Performance for Reach Your Potential Training and Master Class Coach for Precision Nutrition. Today's episode is brought to you by Simply Faster. Simply Faster is an online athletic performance technology shop distributing items such as the FreeLab timing system, GymAware, K-Box, 1080 Sprint, and the SpeedMat. I've gotten many of these items from Simply Faster and can confidently say that they make today's best training technology available to everybody. The FreeLab timing system has revolutionized both my practices and my athlete assessments, allowing me to look at the 10-meter fly capability of dozens of athletes in a matter of seconds. It is wireless, compact, portable, and incredibly versatile. The K-Box and 1080 Sprint are fantastic tools for any coach looking to build speed, agility, and implement training scenarios that go beyond the traditional weight room. The 1080 Sprint is being used by great coaches training some of the fastest sprinters in the world, and it truly represents high-performance speed training. I can personally attest that Simply Faster's customer service is second to none. Christopher at Simply Faster responds quickly to queries, and anyone who makes a purchase from Simply Faster is in good hands. If you want to acquire some of the best high-tech training equipment available, stop by simplyfaster.com. That's simply with an I, faster.com. They are the future of coaching technology. Hi, hello, and welcome to episode 44 of the Just Fly Performance Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Smith, and today on the show, we have Adam Feit. As I mentioned in the intro, he is the Director of Sports Performance for Reach Your Potential Training, also known as RIPT or Get Ripped. Such a cool name for a facility. He's also a master class coach at Precision Nutrition. He is a man of many hats. He has worked at every level of physical preparation from youth all the way up to the professional level. Most of his recent time has been with youth athletes, high school athletes, and that's a lot of what we're going to talk about today. Speed, power, and vertical jump development in the context of particularly youth athletes, but what we're talking about could definitely be applicable for higher level collegiate and even professionals as well if that base foundation is not laid. Just speaking of youth development, I was thinking of what I believe Ron McKeefer and I were talking about in a previous podcast episode. And that's that in other countries and cultures, some of the best coaches are those who are training the young athletes. And that's such an important thing, like that we set these young athletes off on the right foot, that we don't give them problems and issues or foster environments that will create those that college coaches have to try to fix later. And at that point, it's often really difficult, especially my experience working as a track and field coach in both the club, like youth level now, and then at the college level before. Once some of that technique is ingrained, it can be hard to fix. And what better to have great coaches working with some of our young athletes? And Adam is the epitome of that, just doing an amazing job. I first heard of him through looking at a product he had made with Athletes Acceleration, Complete Jumps. I believe it's Complete Jumps Training. A jump product aimed at coaches, which is really cool. You don't have to say, we'll increase your vertical 12 inches, you know, to get coaches to buy it if it's good quality information coming from a great source. And so the approach that Adam takes to jump training, it's unique. It's really cool, and it opens a lot of doors to overall development. A lot of it revolves around just kind of taking the jump from the inside out, how it actually is worked in sport, how to properly warm an athlete up for a plyometric session, which is just such a cool point that Adam touches on today, amongst other things. And overall, the general theme of today is going to be Adam sharing his thoughts on speed, acceleration, and jump development in youth athletes. So we're just going to go into a bunch of really cool topics on that. Even if youth athletes isn't your main population, the concepts are really universally applicable. So just an overall, a great show for any level of coach or athlete for that matter. And just with the hybrid jumps thing that Adam gets into, you can take that so many ways creatively. And it just seems like such an amazing application for developing athletes in both injury prevention and performance. So really cool show. Great to have Adam on. I think you guys are going to like this one. So let's get on to it. All right, Adam, welcome to the show today. Thanks for being on, man.
Hey, Coach Joel, I really appreciate it, man. Great honor, and appreciate all the content and material you're putting out. So it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks again.
Yeah. Well, really excited to talk to you today about a lot of coaching questions and different aspects of methodology and sports psychology. And could you kick it all off really briefly just by kind of telling where have you been? I know you've been a lot of places in the strength and conditioning, sports science, coaching field. Could you share with us that briefly, and then we'll get to a few questions?
Well, briefly is going to be a tough one.
Yeah, sorry.
I feel like I've notched every belt in this coaching conundrum, right? So in its probably most simplistic timeline view, I'm going right now in my sixth year as director and partner at Reach Your Potential Training, RIPT, in New Jersey, which is a private sports performance center for youth athletes. So 6 years, met Bobby Smith, my partner, is the 2008 Olympic trials champion in the javelin. Wanted to put together centers. Wife's Dr. Sharon Wentworth put together, she's a physical therapist, wanted to get the center for kids. And I was like, okay, great. What are we working with? And it's like, training 7 girls right now for about $20 an hour cash. And I was like, okay, and what do you want to build? And so that's really blossomed into like an athletic factory. You know, we've trained over 4,000 kids these past 5 years, which has been incredible. So most of my time has been there. I'm also a level 2 certification instructor and assistant director of performance nutrition for precisionnutrition.com. And I do a lot of work with their coaching programs there, as well as their seminars, so that if I'm not coaching kids throughout the day, I'm working with fitness professionals and coaches online and traveling the world, spreading the good word of PN and coaching psychology. So that's been taking up a lot of my time, balancing that between being a dad and a husband. And before I got to RIPT, I was in the NFL for a short stint. I did 1 year in the Carolina Panthers as an assistant strength coach. And right before that, I was a head strength conditioning coach in Division I at Eastern Michigan University. So that was, let's say, circa 2010. Prior to that, I did 2 years at the University of Louisville, working as a football strength conditioning coach there. So that was 2009-2008. Going back 2007, I was a graduate assistant strength coach at the Citadel, the Military College of South Carolina. And prior to that, I'd finished my undergrad at Springfield College in 2006, did a variety of internships, breaking into the field in strength conditioning. I was at the U.S. Olympic Training Center in San Diego, Arizona State University, University of Connecticut, and, really the rest is history. So I got in the field, got into college about 2003 and never looked back since. Always doing something above and beyond and, trying to make this coaching career a better place for all of us.
Yeah, that's awesome. So many places you've been, all the experience you had. I do apologize for probably trying to, you probably could have talked about that for at least 10 minutes. And so I'm sorry.
I did it, that's for sure.
I put the crunch on you a little bit. So let's jump into some nuts and bolts. And this first question I asked, because actually Ken Clark had mentioned, I think, something about this with what you guys were doing at RIPT and teaching the relationships between top end speed and acceleration and rhythms and teaching one before the other. But could you talk a little bit about your approach to teaching acceleration to young athletes, and as well as the relationships between top end speed and acceleration, and how you go about teaching speed? I suppose that ended up being a really huge question with speed, but if you could talk about that for a little bit there.
Yeah, let me break it down. First, Dr. Ken Clark's an amazing guy. Really, really lucked out having him kind of roughly right down the road down at Westchester. Came into our facility, visited us numerous times, and actually I just got to catch up with him at the Altus Training Center a couple weeks ago doing a presentation. So really, really appreciate his work, and anytime we connect Ken Clark with something we're talking about speed, my ears perk up with that. So, one of the biggest things I'd like to credit my partner Bobby with, being at a high-level Olympic caliber athlete and working with coaches like Dan Path is, this revelation of how we focus so much on acceleration. And we really forget to neglect this body position, especially working with kids, right? So, we were talking earlier about, my career has gone from the NFL, college. I was a Division III athlete. I've coached every level. And, these past 5+ years, it's working with adolescents. And what we've noticed time and time again is that, coaches and whatever level, they're going to be like, hey, You know, why are you focusing on max velocity? Why are you focusing on top end speed? They're never going to reach that in their sport. And, you know, unless you're training a track athlete, that's probably true for a lot of the people that we're training. But when working with youth athletes, when you look at them run, they're going to reach their top speed, their max velocity quicker because their speed reserve is just non-existent. They do not have this like overarching tank of I'm just going to continually get faster, right? They're not going to accelerate to 50, 60 meters like an elite sprinter. So they're going to reach it sooner, and then therefore they're going to have to hold it longer. And something that we focus on, which is, you know, I'd say pretty unique at RIPT, at Reach Your Potential Training, is that, you know, we teach max V first. We want them to be in a great position and having this great body position, posture in the standing upright, because, you know, we work with a lot of female athletes. So posture is a big issue when we're talking things like anterior pelvic tilt and whatnot. And so, you know, we'll alternate our sessions between max velocity work for, you know, upright posture and then our acceleration work, because we really, really firmly believe, and we've seen it with our kids, is if we can't get them in an upright tall position in this max V posture, how can we ask them to generate tension to produce force in this crouched low and, you know, driving out position, this acceleration? And if we're always working acceleration, like most sport coaches will tell us to do, like, oh, they're sprinting 10 yards and then they're going to slow down. Well, what's going to happen when they do have to go to that next level, when they have to open up? So, you know, it is pretty unique for us because we are in the private sector. But to kind of go back to your point, you know, we're gonna alternate between max velocity work. And again, it's going to be variations, right? We're gonna focus on marching. We're going to focus on skipping. We do a lot of work with external implements like PVCs and medicine balls because it's an automatic coaching cue for our athletes as well as our coaches. So we'll do a lot of work with that. We've adapted drills like the wicket drill from, you know, great track and field coaches and what they're doing, because, you know, kids don't understand the ability to, one, apply force, but two, to hold that upright posture when they're running tall. And so, you know, combining that with some of the acceleration that we work, which is your basic, you know, different types of sprinting mechanics and whatnot, you know, we make sure our kids understand the secrets to movement. And number one is body position. Is if we can't have great body position, it doesn't matter what type of chain resistive sprint you do, hill sprint, flag sprint, chase sprint, breakaway sprint, it doesn't matter. If you can't be in a great body position, it won't be optimal. And then we get into more acceleration work where, you know, rule number two is covering ground. And then three, you know, first step has to be explosive. But we make it so, you know, not brainwashing, but our kids know that. We constantly ask them, secret to movement, secret to movement, secret to movement. What is it? They have to understand everything and why we're doing things. So a little bit of a crazy question there, answer. But, you know, we're not afraid to address top end work. We have a turf field in our facility up to 60 yards. Are we going to reach top end speed by 30, 40 yards? Probably not. But it's important for us to kids, because kids are going to run. They're going to run, and we want to make sure that they look well, they feel well, and they're performing well. And so, you know, we're not afraid to run, especially in our facility.
That's a cool answer. Actually, as you were answering, I was kind of, the wheels were turning in my head a little bit about, and what you said makes perfect sense, but I was like, okay, posture and acceleration. Well, the only way to do that would be to, you'd have to like push against a sled or something to be able to actually feel like your body alignment. But then again, like, the way that we probably respond best is just fighting gravity. You know, how can you be as tall against gravity? And that would be the easiest and foremost thing. So what you just said, I kind of was turning it over my head a little bit, because I coached, you know, youth track, and I always think about working with those kids in those contexts. But that makes perfect sense. It's the easiest environmental cue you have available is working in the top end and upright first.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, we may not get to that top end speed, but that positioning that we're trying to teach these kids to accelerate and eventually, you know, start to get tall, like our, you know, constant cues we're telling them is like, look, you don't want to stand straight up, but it's like a plane taking off, right? So you're going to be in that acceleration position, and then you're going to reach that altitude, right? That 35,000 feet where the pilot's like, cool, take your seatbelts off, walk around. Well, let's get up to there, but watch our athletes. You know, are their hips back? Are they running with these low hips and their pushback where, you know, they're not allowing optimal stride length and frequency? Chances are yes. And a lot of kids, you know, then from every point of view, you know, how is their arm action? How is their front side mechanics? How are their backside mechanics? And if we're not addressing that, right, like, how are we going to see that? If we're just constantly putting a sled in front of them or a sled behind them and telling them to push harder and run faster, well, great, but there's, like you said, there's gravity and there's a bunch of other forces that we have to counteract. And, you know, so for us, running is an important way to counteract that.
Yeah. Adam, what is your approach to building sports speed or game speed as opposed to just straight linear speed? Like, what are you, especially with the athletes you're working with and the developmental level that they're at, are there Are there considerations you might make for any, you know, sport specific based movement outcomes versus like a track start or a 40 yard start?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question because, you know, my background is not really track and field based, and I partnered up with a guy that was a high level track and field athlete. And so, you know, I always have this running joke with him about, you know, all you have to do is run straight and lean left. And, you know, we have a story about one of our first athletes who was a phenomenal lacrosse player in college for a national championship team. And Bobby had worked with her early on and just got her incredibly fast. I mean, all the track and field work that he had done, you know, being at the Olympic Training Center and working with great coaches. And she came back, she's like, man, I am killing it out there. I just don't know how to stop. And it was like, it was a revelation because, you know, when you're working so straight ahead, you know, you've got time to decelerate and really you're running straight ahead. But for us, like you had said earlier, you know, we're working with a field sport athlete, and this goes to the conundrum of, you know, well, how fast are they going to go before they have to stop, you know, decelerate, reaccelerate, change direction. And so, you know, the term sport speed and game speed, you know, we know that athletes are probably not going to reach their maximum speed, you know, in a given change of direction or duration. So, you know, for us, we spend so much time on change of direction and movement mechanics because, you know, they're going to have to move side to side. They're going to have to do, you know, crossover diagonal work, you know, getting them in a position that they're going to succeed on that field. So, but in terms of like building sport speed, you know, in our model, most of our kids train twice a week. You know, the pressures to play AAU, there's tournaments, there's clubs, there's everything above and under the sun. So, you know, in day one of our program, where, you know, we'd like to think that we're optimally, you know, CNS fresh, we're going to train linear speed on day one. And, you know, we're going to alternate between periods of acceleration and some max velocity work. But on day two of the program, that's where we're focusing more. And you can say it sport specific or really athlete specific and movement specific, you know, changing side to side in multiple directions. And so, if it's in, you know, let's say it's a program state of agility, you know, if we're constantly doing that, hey, run straight, that's it. Or, you know, run to this cone and plant off your left foot. You know, your athletes are going to lose their ability to make these decisions and react and ultimately perform in sport. And you and I both know sport is a chaotic environment, right? So in our speed program, whether it's a linear day or a lateral day or a multidirectional day, you know, we're always going to end with some element, some little thread of training where it is a little bit of reactive base or chaotic base in a competitive drill. So if that's some sort of chase sprint where you're going off a visual, an audible, or a partner command, if it's an agility drill in a chaos setting where we give them some instruction, but they've got to figure out the rest or they're using their partners, we want to do that all the time. We just want to add that in. And absolutely, as we get closer to, you know, preseason and the specific prep period, we're going to do a little bit more of that. So there's no sense doing all that right now, let's say if it's early off season. But, you know, it's important that we're not just telling kids to run to a cone and turn left or, you know, pivot on the right side and burst, you know, right. So in terms of sport speed and game speed, you know, it's a balance in itself. But, you know, in the private sector, we're not going to be running with footballs. We're not running with lacrosse sticks. If there are elements of that we need to include in a program, we'll save that for the camps and clinics that we may have to go offsite and work with, because that's what parents want to see. For us in the facility, we tell them, hey, look, you know, we're going to make them a better athlete. We're going to get them to transfer this over to that soccer field or lacrosse field or that track.
You're listening to the Just Fly Performance Podcast, brought to you by Simply Faster. Yeah, I think part of the essence of that question is the specificity argument, what the parents want to see. Oh, is this specific enough to this? Obviously, there's general movement principles that are so important. And I mean, how do you find that? I mean, that balance with you get a lot of people who are like just constantly asking for specific training where you're at. Is that like kind of the number one parent question that you get?
You talk to probably any private sector coach, that's going to be, you know, the top question for sure, because that's what they're used to. So if they have this child prodigy athlete, you know, think about it. They're paying, you know, upwards. I know by us, you know, we're in Monmouth County, New Jersey. You know, parents are paying upwards of $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, up to $10,000 for these private academies and clubs. And so they have that specific sport skill instruction. If it's hitting, for instance, you know, you've got a hitting coach, you've got a pitching coach, you probably got a fielding coach. So that's kind of what they're used to. So when you say you're a sports performance center, they think automatically, well, great, this is going to be sport specific. And right away we tell them, we debunk them, look, you know, every athlete is going to do some degree of, you know, flexion, extension, rotation, pushing, pulling, hinging, squatting, bending, everything. And our job is to make them more efficient at those patterns. And we're going to transfer that over to that field. So, you know, that could be, you know, like dad comes in, he wants to work on his baseball swing. Well, dad, that's why you have a hitting coach for that. We're going to work on core control and synchronization and make sure that we're firing through the hips and not the lower back. And ultimately, you know, hey, we'll improve some thoracic mobility. That's going to improve his swing. So, but I can't control, I'm not going to worry about, you know, weighted ball work right now or, you know, crazy agility drills using a baseball bat because that's not our specialty. And really more so, we're not experts in that sport. We can be great athletes as college athletes, but if we're not coaching that sport, I'm doing my clients, my parents and their kids a disservice of doing sport-specific work. So I'll say, hey, this is what I'm really, really good at. I went to school for this. It's this general preparation. Let me do this job, and let's see how we can be one elemental puzzle of your child's creation in this sport. So if we're the general prep coaches, cool. Let us focus on these dynamics of movement, and then let's work together to create this ultimate athlete.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Yeah, and those questions and just the balance of general and specific training, so important. And so further along the physical prep pipeline, I know you've done a ton of work in the world of jumping ability. What do you see in the athlete populations you get? What is the biggest need in their jumping ability? And then also talk maybe a little gender differences in that need.
Yeah, this was an interesting topic for us because being a former college coach and then working in the NFL and then now getting to the youth setting, for me, everything was about systems. And we were seeing, you know, programs, you know, as a college coach, right, you write this packet, the summer packet or this winter packet or, you know, do this type of program in some sort of facility with no supervision. And you're trying to make it as simple as possible. And what we were noticing that there is this a very, very big disconnect between what our athletes were doing and what our coaches were expecting. And so, you know, we took it upon ourselves of looking through the material and keeping things super simple. Like we put out the coach's guide to jump training, you know, last year, but really it was a way for us to look at streamlining and systemizing programming with jumping. And so that was because we're seeing things with youth athletes. So in terms of the biggest need, it's such a requirement, but, you know, absorption of force and eccentric control. And when it comes down to jumping, it's their ability to land from that jump. I can't tell you how many jumps or jump attempts I've seen where an athlete jumps, their body position is just absolutely atrocious. Their knees are caving in, their chest is down, they're landing straight legged. You know, they're not soft on a box if they're doing box jumps. There's no control of their body. And it's important for us, especially as youth athletes, because, you know, regardless if you believe in Olympic lifting or not, you know, jumping is one of the best ways to develop power in youth athletes because it doesn't require any equipment. It can be done anywhere. It focuses on the number one things that kids will use on that field or court, and that is their body weight. And what I've noticed, you know, with local high schools and colleges and just, you know, these guru trainers that are out there, they're doing too much, they're doing too soon, and they're doing too often, right? Like you can look at any, I mean, your Facebook feed and my Facebook feed is probably pretty similar with coaches at any level. And, you know, athletes and parents are posting things. How often do you see that, you know, 52 inch box jump with bumper plates, right? And they barely get on, or they do that, you know, wacky approach jump and it's like 68 inches. And it's like, great. Like, how is that going to approach? Or are you doing 30 seconds of box jumps or barrier jumps, whatever have you. So, you know, education and proper instruction are definitely our major keys with youth athletes. And then, you know, we're trying to teach them to like get rid of the boxes, get rid of all these approaches and all these competitions that you're doing for proper work. And jumping has a great place in any type of performance program, especially with our youth athletes, because we can do so much work with that. And it's important that, you know, when you talk about gender differences, like, you know, we specialize in the female athlete. Our physical therapy clinic, they specialize in ACL reconstruction. So, you know, about 80% of our kids are female. And so when you're battling things like, you know, wider hips and Q angles and, you know, joint laxity and just, you know, improper movement patterns and activation patterns, you know, those are the things that we're trying to correct because, you know, when parents come in, they're going to pay for training or, you know, they're going to pay for rehab. And we want to make it take such a proactive approach and help these athletes gain control of themselves, understand the dynamics of the movement that we're asking them to do, but so that they can apply that and they're in a best position to be successful.
Yeah, that's great stuff. I like the force absorption. So is so huge. And It was that you actually, that made me think of a book. I've kind of gone back to these books that were popular in the mid 2000s. I think this guy, trainer Alex Vasquez, and I was looking at his program. It's like 40 depth landings a day for, and you just kind of straight load it every day of the week. And I was like, well, it's a lot, but it probably gets you decent that pretty quickly. But I mean, you've also heard those, I've heard the study about like, if you do too many like depth landings and absorptions and you don't learn to react properly, maybe it's the idea between deceleration and change of direction. So I guess what my question is, what's the balance? How do you look at progressing an athlete from just absorbing force into full go plyometrics and those types of things?
Yeah, the first thing we look at is how do we organize the training load, right? So, you know, if we're looking at sets and reps, if we're looking at the intensity of the jump, you know, for us, you know, there's been so many resources about, you know, well, let's look at the duration of the jump, the amplitude, is it short response, is it long response? What about directionals, right? What happens if you're on one leg and two legs, or 1-2 and 2-1, or you're doing repetitive and continuous? And, you know, that's why we put together a very basic system for coaches, because, you know, for us, you know, and we reserve the right to be wrong, but this has worked for us. If we're trying to develop power, I look at it like Olympic lifting. You know, for many of us, we're probably not going to do more than like 3 reps if you're doing, you know, repetitions of the snatch or the clean or the jerk and variations of all that. You know, you may go up to 4s, you may go up to 5s, you may do some complexes with 6s, but why were we doing sets of 10 and 15 and 40, right? Like with jumping, because if we're training the same movement patterns, and yes, it's not against a load. So maybe this is more speed strength emphasis versus strength speed or explosive strength, but why are we writing sets of 10 on box jumps? Why are we writing sets of 3? Why are we writing sets of 2? And more specifically, why don't we not have a system of, well, I don't know, what's harder? Is a box jump harder or is a depth jump harder? What are our classifications for that? What happens if you do a long jump to a vertical jump? What happens if you do a rotational jump into a long jump? And so, you know, for us looking at the system, we wanted to make sure, you know, how can we use what we have and how can we streamline this for coaches when they write their programs? You know, are we doing everything in the vertical plane? Are we just jumping up and are we jumping out? Because coming from a football background, those are the two primary tests that, you know, the combine's going to use. How high can you jump and how far can you jump? But you and I both know most injuries occur in the transverse plane. So what type of jumping are we doing in that rotational movement pattern? So I'm kind of getting on a little rant here. Sorry, coach. But okay. we wanted to look at things from all angles. Reps and sets. So for us, we look at it from Olympic lifting. And then, you know, when I first started programming, a lot of my work was done with using relative intensity and, you know, Prilipin's chart, because, you know, that was something that made sense to me. And as the weight got heavier, we did less reps and we did more sets and the weights became more challenging. Well, how can we take that same approach and apply that to jumping? And so it's worked for us. It's worked for a lot of coaches. You know, if you're a high level track and field athlete and you're relying on true plyometrics and stretch shortening cycle, you know, repetitions and movement mechanics, this probably isn't for you. But if you're working with youth athletes and getting them in the proper position, this might be something to work on and use in your toolbox.
You're listening to the Just Fly Performance Podcast, brought to you by Simply Faster. Yeah, that's awesome, man. I mean, there's so many components that go into designing that jump program. Would you say that with the landings, though, like just absorbing force, with like an early athlete, are you just having them do all like landings and teaching the position of the landing? Are you doing reactive? At what point do you start really having a strong reactive component there? What's your balance in that?
Yeah, so first thing what we notice, and we completely missed the boat our first couple years, is, you know, all right, let's start with a box jump, right? Because we're thinking, all right, well, if I jump on a 24-inch box, I'm removing 24 inches of gravity, right? So I jump up there, it's easier on the joints, et cetera. So then we're focusing so much on a soft landing, you know, absorbing that, keeping, you know, the chest up, the knees out, the hips back. But we weren't getting them ready to jump. We were just focusing on the jump. And so, you know, working with a variety of coaches and going to a bunch of clinics, we started looking at, you know, are we getting them in the proper position to jump? And this is something that we coined the term snap down. But, you know, before I jump up, what's my arm position look like? Am I being reactive with my arm swing? Because that's if when you're doing a lot of counter movement jumps, you know, are you focusing on this counter movement position? So, you know, before any type of jumping, we're doing some sort of double leg snap down, which is really you're starting up nice and tall, you're snapping your arms back and you're loading that body into that jump position. And so we might add pauses, we might add repeats. We want to make sure that we can get that rhythm and timing down first. Once we've gotten that, then we'll throw that in the warm up, but then we'll throw in the jump. And then, you know, let's take a basic progression. We work on the snap down, and then we turn that snap down into a box jump, and then we'll work that box jump into a depth drop or an altitude drop. And we're not going crazy, right? Like, we have soft plyo boxes. They don't go higher than 24 inches in our facility. We don't do any of our landings, you know, greater than 18. We're not doing reps of 40, you know, but can I land in that position? And when I land from that depth drop or that altitude landing, that's going to set up my next jump. So then, you know, a basic progression after that is our depth jump. But again, being mindful of that volume and frequency, because like you and I both know, like, yeah, okay, cool. I drop from a box and I jump up. It doesn't feel sore. I can probably do a lot of that. But I mean, that's pretty neurologically taxing, especially, you know, the heavier the athlete are and depending on where they are in their plan. So, you know, for us to get back to the original question is, before jumping, let's make sure they can get in the right position to do that. And we notice that a lot with our single leg work is because coaches were just doing double leg jumps and single leg jumps. And, you know, do a single leg snap down, snap your arms back and get yourself into that RDL position fast. Watch where that body position goes. That knee is going to rotate in. The hips are going to shoot offset to the side. The chest is going to fall down. And we're looking at, you know, like, this is the wrist position for an ACL tear if they're landing from that. So why aren't we working that? So we slow cook things so much right now. We take our time. And, you know, it's a long-term project for us. So before any type of reactivity and short response work, how can we get them to land appropriately? But before that, how can we get them set up properly?
Yeah, with that lower intensity, I imagine you could do a lot of that in the warm-up. And those single-leg snap-downs, that's probably, you could just do, don't even have to stand in a box really for that, just from a tall position or just...
Yeah, so we'll throw that in right into our warm-up. So, you know, in our movement prep series, you know, our we take a joint-by-joint approach, you know, mobility and stability and activation. That'll take about 13 minutes. And then that last like 2 minute block before we get into our dynamic work, like, you know, skipping and high knees and all that work to get them prepped for the speed work, we'll do a plyometric prep session. So let's say my jumping, like right now we're in phase 3 of our jump program for the spring. And so right now we're doing a rotational hurdle jump. So a 90 degree rotational hurdle jump into a vertical jump. So a little bit short response. We're getting two planes of motion because I'm getting the rotational plane and into the vertical plane. We might turn that into a long jump. So then I've got rotational plane, vertical plane, and then linear plane. But that plyo prep period, that might be a rotational tuck jump, or that might be a snap down into a vertical jump. Something to groove the motor pattern right in the warm up. And we're just doing a little bit. We're doing a little flossing, you know, 4 to 6 reps. Get them ready. So then when we get to that plyo block in our program, which is about, you know, anywhere between 6 and 9 minutes, they're like, oh, okay, same movement. Now I'm just adding a hurdle. So like you said, exactly, like use the body weight, use it in the warm up, do a little bit every day. And then if you're doing 2, 3, 4 days per week, you know, make sure you're doing some sort of prep for that period in the specific plane that you're working in.
Yeah. I love what you said about just grooving that movement in the warm-up. I was just talking with Jonas Dodu the other day on Twitter a little bit about some sprinting stuff. He had mentioned how sprinting is fairly instinctual. Like an athlete's going to, I mean, not that we don't want to work our running mechanics, but I mean, you have an athlete sprint, they're going to put one leg in front of the other fairly well, but there's some athletes who just cannot jump. it's amazing to see sometimes with the arms, like you were talking about too, like just the people like separate the arms from the legs and all these things. It's really, and I think that's so cool. You're grooving that in the warm up, particularly, and to be able to take advantage of all the reps you can get in there, and then that should come together better for the jump. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. I mean, we do it in lifting, right? So if you're Olympic lifting, you're doing some sort of complex work in your warm-up, right? So you might do an RDL to a shrug pull, high pull, snatch complex, whatever it is. If you're squatting that day, you might do some corrective goblet squat work or landmine work or band work. Why are we doing that with jumping? We just throw them right in. They're like, oh, you're a great athlete, so we're gonna throw you on a Vertimax and do contrast work. So we're gonna do 3 loaded jumps with the Vertimax, get you off, then hit the vertec as high as possible. Well, what are we doing before that? And so, you know, for us, this is common sense. But sometimes you and I both know, like, common sense isn't that common. And when you're working with youth athletes, these coaches, you know, they're sport coaches, they're volunteer coaches, they're just getting their information from Facebook and YouTube. And so that's why we wanted to put together something of like, hey, there is a system, just take your time. Because if you can, 30 seconds of prep, like anything, right? Like the older you and I get, man, we're probably warming up a little bit more. A little bit more prep will save us so much headaches and frustration and stress in the long run, and we'll get a better outcome of it.
Yeah, man, that is such an awesome point. And just the idea of, we do all this warm-up. I mean, man, all the warm-ups that are available for just doing your squat are off the charts. And you probably could get a million on YouTube, but how many are going to get for proper jumping patterns. It's almost like just jumping is just kind of lumped in with just the general, just classified as power, and that's it. There's nothing technical behind it that we would need to warm up for that idea. But that's so cool, man. I think that's really awesome. Next, I also had a question for you on hybrid jump training. You were just talking about like doing a rotational hurdle jump into a vertical or different things like that. I think that's where movements and ideas, a lot of physical prep, strength coaches, even track coaches. Well, obviously track coach being a little different thing there, but don't see. And can you talk a little bit about that training and its role in both injury prevention and performance enhancement?
Yeah, so this was one that we modified. So Mike Boyle had published an article like years ago about like the classification of jumps. So, you know, he had written there were jumps, there were hops, and then, you know, there were bounds. So, you know, a jump was a two-legged takeoff to a two-legged landing. So any type of long jump or vertical jump. A hop was a jump on one leg and then landing, you know, ipsilateral. So if I jump on my left leg, I'd land on my left leg. And then a bound would be contralateral. So I would jump from my left leg to my right leg. And again, watching your athletes and seeing what happens, you know, like most of us, we were going, you know, double leg jumps and then going right into hops. And then it wasn't transferring over, right? The amount of force they were producing, the speed at which they were moving, they weren't prepared to go right to one-to-one. And so we started looking at what was the body position like from the landing? And if I was going to get to another jump, how could we better prepare them? And it's been done. I don't know if it's ever been coined anything else. I don't know if we ever took the time to actually acknowledge it, but it was like, well, why don't we focus on, you know, one to two-legged jumps? So why don't we jump on one? Let's get them powerful on one leg and help them with their confidence and land on two. That way we can get that propulsion from that single leg, land on two, and it's like, okay, I'm getting there. And then if we wanted to make it super advanced, why don't we start doing two-legged jumps to a one-legged landing? Now, again, we're working with youth athletes. We're not doing a lot of that, but it is a tool for the toolbox. So in terms of injury prevention, when you're looking at, you know, things in terms of sport, like, you know, watch the next time somebody goes up for a layup, watch the next time somebody goes up for a volleyball spike or going out for a fly ball. Ask yourself how many times they're jumping up with two and landing with two, or they're jumping up with one and landing on the same one. Most often or not, and you can go to YouTube and look at these, they're jumping from one and then they may not land two at the same time and they might do that stutter landing. But when do we get hurt jumping up? It's all about coming down. It's that absorption of force that we go back to, that eccentric control. So one of it in terms of how can we better prepare our athletes for landing on one leg? And so that was the big gap we tried to fill there with the hybrid. The other component was, you know, we have a 16,000 square foot facility. We're very, very fortunate to have an immense amount of room. But as we continue to grow, you know, we started with seven. Our last winter, we had 382 athletes in there and we were running out of space. And so what happens now? You have boxes, you have hurdles, you have mini bands, resistance bands, and you want to do all these things and you have no room to do it. So the second component of the hybrid we introduced was, how can I train multiple planes and still get a great training stimulus if I'm limited on time or space? And so for us, it was, or let's look at an in-season program. If we get an athlete one time a week, well, what are we going to pick for that jumping movement today? Is it only vertical plane? Well, how can I do a vertical plane movement, like a vertical jump, turn that into a linear plane movement, like a long jump, and then add some sort of lateral movement or rotational plane? So we looked at planes and movement there too. So it allowed us to fill some gaps in terms of injury prevention, but also creativity and organization because, you know, now we had a, let's say a 10 yard by a 3 yard area for jumping. And we only had a couple minutes. We had to get a lot of bang for our buck movements. So this is where these things like the rotational jump into the vertical jump into a long jump, that filled all the gaps of creativity, you know, specificity in terms of planes of motion, and as well as, you know, targeting these different body awareness qualities that we're looking with the athletes, because not everything was just jumping up and then jumping out. It was about how can I control my body in space.
You're listening to the Just Fly Performance Podcast, brought to you by Simply Faster. I think that's a great just a great concept, and it brings me back to a little bit of what Lee Taff was talking about in a prior episode, like watching how athletes move in their, you know, just watching athletes move in their sport and looking at they don't just jump in the, they don't, it doesn't all just look like a straight depth jump, and it doesn't just look like a standing long jump. There's so many iterations in there. And when you're coaching your athlete populations, are you, is it almost all, or what's the balance between the quantitative and qualitative? How often are you measuring the outputs of these different types of jumps, and how much of it is just purely movement oriented and movement quality?
Yeah, that's a great point because, you know, like Coach Taff is, he's, you know, we call him the godfather of speed, and but he's great at it. And I've been very fortunate to present on the same stage with him multiple times and watching how he develops this coach's eye to see things. And he'll tell you, like, watch it, see what happens, and then adjust accordingly. So for us, you know, in the private sector, it's a little different than being at your setting, but parents want results. So, you know, we build a vertical jump and a long jump in our assessment. And so that might be only a vertical plane and a linear plane. But where we see the transfer of, like, the lateral movement, the rotational jumping, is their change of direction. So whether it's, you know, we're doing 1-2 stick variations and shuttle variations, you know, how can we build in this, you know, how fast are they cutting from point A to point B and coming back? Are they oozing into the cut? What's their body position like? You know, there's been studies done. Hey, there's, you know, you and I were talking about Cal earlier, but, you know, let's take a 5-10-5 group and let's focus on the 5-10-5 and work on the 5-10-5, or let's do an eccentric block of training and let's compare 5-10-5 times. And, you know, studies are showing, boom, like the group that's doing eccentric work is transferring over better to change of direction work. So from a private sector standpoint of view, an athlete will come in, we'll do a 10-yard sprint, we'll do a 6-yard shuttle for change of direction. So again, we can evaluate that control of their body, a long jump and a vertical jump. We'll test that at the end of every season. We'll chart everything. So athletes been training with us for 5+ years. We have their entire testing protocol on Excel. So if a parent ever wanted to look at that. But for me, when I'm looking, you know, young athletes, they're going to get better. And so, you know, a young athlete, literally, I mean, we can put on like 8 inches on a vertical jump in 10 weeks or less, if they're that bad and if they're that untrained. I look at the success of our program in terms of, all right, I take these athletes that have been training with us for years, and now I only get them for like a 12-week, maybe an 8-10-week block in the summer, and they're highly trained right now. How can we still improve there? So, you know, it's kind of a multi-sided coin here. We're going to have a performance output. Parents will want to see that. Kids will want to see that. But I'm looking at, you know, speed of the bar when we transfer to the weight room. I'm looking at change of direction. There's a lot of components that I want to look at. And as director, that's what I'm charged with is, all right, cool. These jump variations are cool, but is this stuff going down? Is this getting better? How are they performing optimally on that field?
Okay. So the specific hybrid jumps themselves, you aren't really tagging with the quantitative measures. It's more like doing those jumps is going to make someone standing vertical better, or the stuff the parents might care about, or their sprint or their change of direction, that volume of explosive movements and improper then is going to help the stuff that you can say to parents. Is that kind of what we're getting at there?
Yeah. So with that, let's say right now we're doing the rotational jump to a vertical jump to a long jump. I'm working the two measurables. So I'm getting the vertical jump, I'm getting the long jump. I'm also improving that body awareness. And if we're talking about, you know, short response jumping, so they go right into the hurdle jump, vertical jump, long jump, I'm getting that elastic component. I'm able to validate that once they get to the weight room and out in the field by just simply watching their patterns, watching their movement. How fast are they coming out of change of direction? What's their body position like? But in terms of quantitative analysis, we keep things really, really simple because we'll probably see kids, you know, anywhere between 12 and 24 weeks a year, and that's it. And if it's a vertical and long jump that they need for the recruiting film or their scouting report, that's what we'll work on there.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds good, Adam. Your time is limited here, so I have one question left for you. It's kind of a myopic question. I like to ask these every now and then. But if you could pick only 3 exercises, being either strength or plyometric in nature, to develop vertical jumping ability in high school populations, what would they be and why?
Myopic at its finest. Well, let's see. So I got to point out the keywords here. High school population. So I think that's important to remember. So I would say number one would be some sort of deep squat, because we're getting, you know, the biggest thing. We have a strength deficit in youth athletes. If you follow any of the research from Avery Fagenbaum, you know, kids, we have this deficit in strength. So we have to get our lower body strength. I learned early on power burns in a flame of strength. And so you can't develop explosion without a foundation of strength. So I'm going to say squats for one of them. I'm then going to say some sort of clean variation. I used to be a big hang clean fan because it was easier to teach. I still think it's a little bit easier to teach, but I really like the force production aspect of it too. So I'll probably recommend some sort of block or, you know, maybe mid shin, or if they have that mobility from the floor type of, clean variation there. And then, only 3, huh?
Yeah, no, you only get 3. It's a small world of training right now.
All right. So I'm going to say, you know, if you want to get better, you said, you know, another keyword was developing vertical jumping ability. I'm going to say you got to jump. So I'm going to throw in a hybrid of, you know, some sort of vertical jump to a long jump combination. I'd love to throw in some like, you know, RDL or, you know, hamstring leg curl variation there, like a glute ham raise. I think that's important too for the deceleration component. But if I want to get better at jumping, you know, specific at its finest, I've got to jump a little bit there too. So I'm going to go with it. I'm going to go squats, some sort of block, mid-shin clean maybe, and a vertical long jump hybrid. Get some of the elastic component and biplanar movement patterns there.
Hey, yeah, that's a proven recipe, man. I like how, yeah, you're sneaking two jumps into one there. No, I'm just
yeah,
kidding.
I like that. When you know the rules, you can break them. That's what I learned.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's cool. So vertical jump, so basically that's just you'd stand, do a vertical as high as you can, and on the landing, you jump as far as you can. And are you measuring that, or is there any cues associated with that?
Yeah, we'll do exactly that. So we'll build in some, you know, talking earlier, you know, how do we prepare for that? We'll throw in some pauses, because I think a lot of coaches go right into from long response to short response. So, you know, we might do two verticals, pause, turn that into a long jump, because anytime you're changing direction, that's where we're measuring, you know, force output and, you know, how far they're jumping, et cetera. So we might do a vertical jump, and then when they're ready, we'll turn that right into a long jump. That's a little bit easier than doing a long jump, and we're looking for maximal horizontal displacement and then turning that into a vertical jump. You're almost always going to see the landing position be a little bit different. So I like the vertical into the long jump, because once you're ready, they're comfortable in that basic vertical plane. Let's really work on that hip extension and get out. So yeah, we'll throw the hybrid in there for good taking there.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah, so cool how you mentioned, yeah, one jump can change the mechanics of leading into another jump. But yeah, I know you got to go, man. But hey, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate you taking the time this morning. And yeah, best luck to you with your upcoming trainings.
Hey, Coach, I appreciate it once again. And look forward to all of your material out there. So keep doing it. You're making this, this field a much better place for us. So thanks again.
All right. Well, that's another podcast episode in the books. Thanks for being with us today. As always, if you enjoyed the episode, please don't hesitate to leave us a rating or review. I'd really appreciate it. Also, please visit our sponsor, simplyfaster.com, suppliers of high-end training technology such as the K-Box, FreeLap Timing System, PowerDot, SpeedMat, and more. Amazing resource for anyone looking for that edge in training and tracking, assessment, and more. Just such a great company, and proud to have them as sponsors of the show. We'll catch you guys next week. Have a good one.